south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander...
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
Here's something that might amuse you, or not. I have an old friend from my high school and junior high school days, from up Chicago, Mexican guy, Johnny Gonzalez, otherwise known as Taco. That happens, you know. Latinos love their nicknames. Anyway, Johnny will send me an email, and then 4 or 5 years will go by, and I won't hear anything. By then, I completely forget about the connection. Then, I'll get another email. Anyway, he said he's dying to come down and visit, except when he went down to get a passport. It was no go, because he's a felon. Actually, he's got 3 felonies. He did his time. I think he was in the slammer 3 times. He said, I don't want you to feel sorry for me, though. Sure, I regret my felonies, but it's not all bad. He said, you know, certain women are attracted to guys with felonies. In my circles, anyway, he said. Maybe not the circles you run around in, Johnny, but I'm telling you, it's true. And you know, when he wrote that, I had to sit back for a minute and think about it. It's funny how notorious criminals in jail get marriage proposals from women all the time. Not quite the circle of friends I hang with. You know the old saying, but for the grace of God or Buddha or Krishna, I could have gone down that road too. You know the popular saying, you're the average of your 5 best friends. It's a good thing I parted ways with my 5 best junior high and high school friends. So have any of you guys and gals out there maintained friendships with some iffy characters from your past? Who turned out really bad, but you remain friends with them because, hey, those childhood connections, they can last forever. By the way, Johnny Gonzalez is 2nd-generation Mexican-American born in Texas, and his felonies, all drug-related. So then why am I bringing this up? Because I get emails from people all the time telling me that they're having a problem getting residency in Mexico, Guatemala, Salvador, whatever. They're telling me that when they apply for that FBI report, you might know the drill. You have to put your fingerprints on a piece of paper, send in $35 or so, and in about a month, they send you a certified, apostilled copy of your antecedents. In other words, you get a rap sheet on yourself. That is, if you've got any antecedents or previous federal crimes on your record. By the way, state charges, like having to go to court for failure to pay alimony or child support, that kind of stuff does not show up on your FBI report. So anyway, I get a steady flow of emails from people saying, Johnny, I got my FBI report, and it's not clean. It's not quite filthy dirty, but it's not clean. They ask me if that's going to cause a problem when they apply for residency. Well, I can't really answer that. You have to talk to your immigration lawyer, the one that's putting together your residency papers. In fact, I have known cases where a soiled FBI report came up, and somehow they got it expunged, applied for a new one, and it was clean. Each case, though, is highly individual. But that question's still out there. Do you have a high school buddy or two? They were good friends of yours in the past, a long time ago. But you'd prefer now to never run into them again. Come on. I bet you've got one or two. All right, moving on. You know, I get lots of emails from older gringos, still up in the States, but having a plan B is high on their list. Funny thing, though. Lots of gringo men up in the States. I'm talking about the over 50 crowd. They're single, divorced, whatever. Kids all grown up in that. But they express in their emails that they're very gun-shy of jumping back into the mating and dating game because up in the States, it's such a minefield. And they've been burned. They're wondering if it's going to be difficult in Latin America to find a girlfriend or boyfriend. And sometimes they think it's going to be really tough because they don't know Spanish. I can understand that. And to tell you the truth, if I was living up in the States, I don't know how I'd be able to handle the mating and dating scene myself. Obviously, if you're living up in the States, there's no such thing as a gringo advantage. Everyone tells me that mating and dating up in the States is hit and miss, a lot of stress. Like, for example, a guy named Peter who wrote to me just 2 days ago. He says, Johnny, I'm 47 years old and feel like I'm living in the wrong century. No luck in the mating and dating business at all. I'm a couple of years divorced. My two kids are finally out of the house, so I thought, well, I'll try it again. Mating and dating, that is. He says, I got on one of those Tinder-like sites. Started chatting with a few 30 and 40-something girls. One of the questions I like to ask is, what was the last book you've read? And when did you read it? Because I'm a reader myself, and I think it's important to have that in common. All right, hold on a second. Me, Johnny, here. Funny you should mention reading. I was just talking to an expat the other day, and he brought that up too. He said he'd like to find a girl who read books as a hobby as well. Then, instead of sitting around watching Netflix and vegetating, we could actually do something constructive together. Anyway, Peter says, no luck. Can't seem to find anyone who reads books these days. In fact, I get the impression that when I say that I read books, they disqualify me. They're thinking, what an old fogey. What a dinosaur. Sorry, but I just don't have too much use for social media. When I admit it, that's not a very good answer either. They seem to want to disqualify me on that count, too. I can't lie, Johnny. There were a few times when I popped that question about book reading. When I'd get a lame response, you don't know how many times I wish I would have said to her, you've heard of books, haven't you? They're sort of like TikTok for smart people. Haha, TikTok for smart people. Good one. So, Johnny, as a result, I've got no choice but to lower my mating and dating standards. On the Plan B front, though, Johnny, everything's falling into place as I should be down in 2024. I hesitate to ask, though, how do Latin Americans feel about books? Signed, Peter from Munsey. Is that Indiana or Illinois? Anyway, Peter, to answer your question, of course, Latin Americans love books. But do they read them? Well, yeah, when they're forced to, like taking a class at school, pretty much just like American kids. The fact is, if you're sitting in a coffee shop down here in Latin America, you just might see one or two people reading a book. That would generally be a Latino college student or an American or European backpacker. Yep, oddly enough, backpackers still maintain the book reading tradition. They seem to be single-handedly keeping that book-reading tradition alive. In fact, anywhere you find hostels or backpackers, you'll find a used bookstore or two. There's a lot of book trading going on. You walk into one of those places with a book, pay maybe $2 or $3 and trade it for something else in the store. I've done it myself 100 times. Now, I'm not a backpacker, never was, but in the early days, in the first, I'd say, 10 years I was down here in Latin America before the internet, I'd go into those places all the time. Stock up on books kept me occupied. But anyway, Pete, if you think you're going to find a Latina girlfriend down here who reads books, I mean, for leisure, I guess it's possible. I had two Latina girlfriends who actually read books. Well, I take that back. One of them actually read books. The other one fibbed and said she did. Well, I bought her a couple of bestsellers in Spanish. She never cracked them once. Yet the other lady, she was really into reading. Most unusual for a Latina or Latino. Really sharp, too, that girl was. You do run into him once in a while. I used to think that if I had a business at that time, I'd have hired her in a second. Now, of course, if you go into a big mall anywhere down here in Latin America, there'll be a bookstore selling nothing but new books. No trade-ins allowed. But man, you can walk in the front door with a shotgun, let loose with both barrels, and never hit a soul. I just don't know how they stay in business. Maybe because they've always got a little restaurant and a coffee shop attached. Oh, and one last thing about mating and dating. My dad used to say, of course, he was referring to mating and dating in the USA. He used to say, finding the right girl can be tough. If you're ugly, you better be funny. And if you're ugly and not a barrel of laughs, you better have money. And you know, looking back on that, I think he said that to me because he knew I was a solid 6. In other words, I better be funny or rich. But little did he know, little did I know, there was this thing called the Gringo Advantage that I'd find some years later by hook and crook, just stumbled into it. A kind of Cinderella effect that automatically, as you cross south of the border, gives you 2 extra points on your score. So a 4 becomes a 6 becomes an 8, and an 8, a 10. Don't believe me? Then come on down and find out for yourself. Funny thing too, even gringos who've gone native, you know, straggly hair, rumpled around the edges, sort of look like they've been sleeping in the same clothes 3 days running. Yep, even gringos gone native, as repulsive as sometimes they may be. You know, going native means hygiene's not a priority. Even so, it seems all gringos gone native have a steady girlfriend. And generally not a girlfriend that's hit the skids. like her boyfriend, the gringo, had done. Usually, some nice Latina girl loves this sad sack gringo and takes care of him. In other words, even guys gone native have the gringo advantage. So then you might be thinking, what about gringa ladies gone native? Well, thankfully, you won't see that much. But when you do, it's a sad sight to see. I'd say about 1 in 20 Americans gone native are ladies. You can generally recognize them a block away. They've got red or green hair, loaded with tattoos and piercings, barefoot, usually selling handmade jewelry in a little stand alongside the road. I always wonder, how did that happen and what would her parents think? Though sometimes you see a gringa gone native who's 40 or 50 years old. Talk about sad cases. Oh, and before I forget, you know, I read books once in a while. I think a lot of you listeners out there know that because I get emails from people saying, Johnny, what are you reading these days? Can you send me a copy? And I usually do. Though my reading list isn't exactly everyone's cup of tea. Well, I'll tell you what I've been doing for a long, long time. I'll read 2 nonfiction books, you know, science or biography, history or something. Then I'll read a book that's a guilty pleasure. You might laugh if I told you the titles of some of them. Anyway, I usually manage to polish off 1 a week or so. Sometimes 2. Now, Captain Mango, you know, he reads a book a day. He's been doing that for years. So, all you bookworm single ladies out there, take note. He gets the gold, all right. The only person I know who reads as much or more than he does is my mother. Though, she still goes into a voting booth and pulls the Democrat lever. There's no accounting for taste. Anyway, my latest reads? Let's see, in the last couple of weeks I read the Elon Musk biography. I read the book Jaws, the story of a hidden epidemic, which is not about sharks, but the human skull. And the book that's my guilty pleasure for the week, My Effin' Life by Geddy Lee, you know, bass player of the Canadian band Rush, R-U-S-H. Oh, and another guilty pleasure, but I could not finish this book. I had to put it down. It was making me sick. Barbara Streisand's autobiography called My Name is Barbara. What a pretentious, stuck-up bitch. She's just not a warm, caring, nice human being. She's got absolutely zero redeeming qualities, except that she can sing. She can really sing. Just abrasive, stubborn. Well, I could go on. So after about a third of the way through, I just threw in the towel. I thought, this is wasting my time. Oh, and last week I read The Mysterious Case of Rudolf Diesel. You know, the guy who invented the diesel engine? Don't laugh, it was super interesting. And a New York Times bestseller. Though the New York Times is more like the National Enquirer now, so I guess maybe I shouldn't have said that. By the way, if you want any of those books, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Say, do you guys know who Noel Coward is or was? He was a world-famous playwright, probably the most famous playwright in the 1930s and 40s. Anyway, he was good with quips, and he once said, "Why do the wrong people travel and the right people stay at home?" Sounds crazy, right? But remember, he said that something like 90 years ago. Now, I think what he was referring to is that way back when, in the 20s, 30s, and 40s, only the very wealthy could travel. They'd take steamboat cruises, you know, trips around the world on the Cunard or Titanic, Queen Mary, etc. By the way, did you know that Titanic had a sister ship? Actually, 2 sister ships, identical in every way. The Olympic and the Britannic. And the Britannic hit a German mine in World War I, 1916, and went down. Anyway, point is, there was a time when only rich people could travel. They'd take 2 or 3 months off at a time, go to Europe, South America, whatever. There was no middle class or, God forbid, a backpacking travel culture. That all started in the 50s and 60s with college students taking the summer off and traveling on the cheap. Did you ever notice in movies from the 50s and 60s when they show Europe, let's say, London, Paris, or Rome, there's almost no tourists. Yet these days, European tourism is balls to the wall. Oh, and another thing Noel Coward said. When asked on a talk show if he was ever going to retire, he said, "Listen, writers never retire. We either drink ourselves to death or take a bullet to the head." Got that right. I still find it so hard to believe that Stephen King was dead drunk while writing at least half of his books. He admitted that in his autobiography. So what's that got to do with the price of tortillas? Except to say that before I came to Latin America, I always thought Americans, you know, North Americans like me and you, had the worst spending habits. But the Latin American people, man, especially the poor and middle class Latin Americans, they've got absolutely terrible spending habits, and the wealthy Latinos aren't much better. By the way, did you ever see the article by Warren Buffett? It's called 10 Tips to Remain Poor. He ought to know, right? Warren Buffett, one of the greatest investors that ever lived. It's as if Latin Americans use that tip sheet as their spending Bible. You know, I remember many times having a similar discussion with my Latina girlfriends, almost all of them who were terrible with money. I mean, really, everyone wants to have money and a nest egg and some savings, right? And they say 50% of Americans couldn't scrape together $500 in an emergency. That may be so, but 50% of Latin Americans, if there was an emergency, couldn't scrape together 50 bucks, even 20. Now, I don't know about you, but when I was a kid, my mother would go through the newspaper, check out all the stores and the prices of things, and she'd head out in the car, maybe cross town, to save, you know, $2 on a product. She'd make the calculations, decide if the trip was worth it or not. She had lots of stops to make, lots of things to buy. She'd have a plan with the most efficient use of time and money. And man, she had this big stash of coupons. Remember those? In Chicago, we used to go to the S&H Green Stamp store as well. They used to give those things out when you bought gasoline at Citgo, Conoco, or Sinclair. The one with the big fake dinosaur at the gas pump. You'd get those stamps, paste them in books. If you had enough, you could go trade them in for things at this big store. I got my first baseball glove that way. I know. People in the States just don't do that anymore. It's too inconvenient. People don't care about saving a few bucks or a few cents. The thing is, Americans, North Americans, went through that stage, that coupon clipping stage, that frugal stage in the 60s and 70s. And Latin Americans never did. They never had coupons. They don't take the Sunday paper, scour it for sales and price shop. When they need something or want something, they just walk over to the corner tienda a block or two away. Now, they could get on a bus and save a whole ton of money by going down to the central market. And some folks will do that, but the vast majority, when they need one or two particular items, they'll just go to the corner tienda and pay 30% more for everything. Worse yet, Latin Americans are addicted to delivery. I'm talking about those little motorcycles that will come from McDonald's and Burger King, Kentucky Fried. Especially on weekends, man, the delivery business is booming. Again, Latin Americans are addicted to takeaway food, even though they really don't have the money to afford that kind of extravagance. Now, I'm not saying to follow my example here. I'm sort of extreme to the other end of the spectrum. I practically never have anything delivered. But Latin Americans, man, sometimes, on weekends especially, the same family will have food delivered twice in one day from two different restaurants. That would be number 6 on Warren Buffett's 10 tips on how to stay broke. Order fast food every chance you get. Another way to remain broke, and Latin Americans are guilty of this too, is never pack your own lunch. Always buy street food. Though when I first came down here, everyone would pack their own lunch, and now almost no one does. Instead, they go to the little street food vendor, the little kiosk, buy some greasy pupusas or arepas, or some of those nasty chicharrones, drop a buck or two or three in the process, which doesn't sound like much, but remember, we're talking about people making $250, $300, and maybe $400 a month. So, as far as workers buying food from those street carts, those guys would line up twice a day for breakfast and lunch. I really didn't know how those guys made ends meet. Because at night, after work, they liked their cerveza, too. In fact, I remember at my own construction projects at noon, everybody would take a break to eat. In the early days, the workers' wives and girlfriends would pack them a box lunch. Healthy, natural stuff, too. These days, not so. Now, they've got two or three little food kiosks parked out in front of every construction project. And of course, the result is everyone here is getting fatter. Well, not everyone. However, I think the worst spending habits Latinos have picked up from Americans is the addiction to credit card debt. Everyone's got debit and credit cards down here. Very low-limit credit cards, though, sometimes only $500. So it's not like a person can get into everlasting monumental debt. Problem is, like up in the States, they get multiple credit cards and jack them all up to the limit. Now, oddly enough, for a culture that's so short on cash, I can't believe Latinos don't make it a point to price shop. Let's say a Latino's in the market for a 42-inch flat-screen TV. There might be 10 stores in their city that carry the same model, with a range of prices. You'd think they'd be smart about it and shop around and go for the lowest price. Same TV, right? But they don't. Now, I don't know about you, but when I buy a medium or big ticket item, I do an extensive search, sometimes too extensive. But don't you look for the best deal, the best price? But it seems for Latinos, it's just not a consideration. By the way, how do you feel when you buy a washing machine or a TV? A week later, you're walking through another store and you notice the same items on sale, $50 cheaper. It burns you up, right? Well, Latinos don't seem to have that concern. And no one saves up for anything. No one's got a nest egg. No one middle class anyway. Oh, and when those remises come in from the relatives living up in the States, I read somewhere it's 1 in 4 to 6 families, depending on which Latin American country you're talking about. You'd think when those remises landed, they'd save some of that dough. But no. Suddenly, keeping up with the Garcias kicks in. 1 month, there's a car in the driveway or a motorcycle. Every month, it's something new. The house gets painted. New TV, new sofa. Enough said about that. All right, moving on. Here's something that's quite amusing, made me laugh. Don't you love it when woke Hollywood entertainment types turn on each other and eat their own? Thanks to Ned, a listener who sent me this article entitled, Cardi B Turns on Democrats. Cardi B says, what a bitch. New Yorkers are going to be drowning in effing rats. And I'll edit this to make it somewhat palatable for human consumption. It says, Bronx-raised rap superstar and former stripper, prostitute, thief, and billionaire. Cardi B turned on Democrats and New York City Mayor Eric Adams for controversial budget cuts last week that would affect schools, libraries, firefighters, police, and much more. Cardi B, super rap star with a 10-word vocabulary, was formerly a mega supporter of the Biden administration, even invited to the White House. She'd suck up to him and make excuses for his errors every chance she could get. Now she's going through the angry regret phase as New York City Mayor Eric Adams announces a 5% across-the-board cut in the budget that will impact all residents. The cuts are said to be primarily driven by the Democrats' open southern border policy that has flooded the metro area of New York with more than 100,000 illegals. It goes on to say, during a live stream, Cardi B reposted the following. I'm an angry-ass bitch right now. I'm an angry bitch. I'm about to go off right now. She said there's a $120 million budget cut in New York that's going to affect my people. Cardi B then turned on Democrats saying, quote, I'm not endorsing no effing presidents anymore. She exclaimed, President Biden can fund 2 wars but can't fund 1 city. And here's the kicker. She says, what's going to happen to my nieces? What's going to happen to my fatherless nephews? What's going to happen with my illegal cousins, my aunts, my criminal friends that are living in the hood? She asked. She said, you all doing budget cuts on the biggest city in the U.S. This shit is getting out of hand. She says, I'm from the Bronx and I don't want to see my shit affected. Then she said, everybody be like, New York is dirty. And it is dirty, the rapper said, adding, and we're going to get even dirtier with these effing budget cuts. What a sterling example of America's finest, huh? Don't you just love it when woke, talentless fools turn on their own? Which begs the question. How's your plan B coming? Meanwhile, we've got a big drought and water problem in Latin America. According to government statistics, Latin America's running out of water. Listen to this. Traffic through the Panama Canal is nearly half capacity these days. Normally, 40 ships go through the greatest shortcut in the world each day. Last week, the canal authority reduced daily passages to only 25, almost half, while predicting further cuts to 18 ships a day by February. The immediate cause? It's the driest October since record-keeping began in the 1950s. The canal locks are short of water. Oh, and did you know that Chile is buckling under 14 continuous years of consecutive drought? They're calling Chile's drought a mega drought. Of course, what the news never tells you is that just like California, agriculture and mining account for around 70% of all the freshwater usage. Now, according to the World Resources Institute, the Latin American countries with the biggest ticking time bomb when it comes to water shortages and drought are Chile, Mexico, and Peru. Yep, Mexico is running out of drinking water. There are water shortages everywhere. There have already been mass protests and people taken to the streets. And it's a common sight to see big old water trucks rolling down the street, that is private water companies delivering water to fill the big empty cisterns in malls and empty cisterns in neighborhoods and residential towers. Mexican citizens are angry. In recent months, thousands have taken to the streets to protest water outages. According to the Mexican Constitution, access to water is a human right that the government must guarantee. But right now, for an increasing number of citizens in major metropolitan areas and small municipalities alike, their right to clean drinking water isn't being met at all. According to groundwater studies, 57% of Mexico's population lacks access to a reliable water supply. With 105 of the country's 653 aquifers being overexploited beyond their capacity to recharge. But, and here's a big but, geologists estimate that more than 50% of all urban water supplies in Latin America are lost to leakage. Bad pipes, bad connections, and little or no maintenance. That's what you get when you hand over the job of controlling utilities to the government. It's a great idea, though, thinking your government is honorable, trustworthy, and capable. But they're not. That's why national healthcare is such a good idea, but has always had a terribly expensive and piss-poor result. As soon as the government gets involved, they f*** it up. Think about that. There would be no drinking water problem at all in Latin America if all the municipal water companies were privatized, because that's the only way to ensure the proper maintenance will be done. If you want to guarantee a poor, even disastrous outcome, put it in the hands of government. Don't ever ask your government to do anything for you, because they'll f*** it up. The next time you hear someone whine about water shortages, etc., I repeat, more than 50% of all the drinkable water in Latin America is lost due to bad plumbing pipes and joints and basically no maintenance. But that doesn't address the crops. We're just talking about drinking water now. Still, we've got those drought conditions, and Bob from Oaxaca, he sent me a little video on how bad it's getting over there. That's Central Valley, Mexico. He showed a local reservoir, kind of a pond, down 10 feet, he said. And he said people with wells are just buying water now, you know, from those big trucks, because the wells are all stressed out. Too many people in the area for what the wells can support. It doesn't look good at all. And Bob was saying the smart people are getting out because it's only going to get worse. Anyway, thanks for that video, Bob. Good luck to you. Oh, and one more thing. We're picking the seminar dates this weekend, so the next Expat Insider Seminar details will be coming at you within a week. Stay tuned.
South of the border, you've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.